Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, August 2nd, 2013. Happy August, everyone. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
And Jenny Rempel.
Heyo.
Alyssa, Jackie, and Tim are away today. Welcome, everyone. Today's program is a show for the pigs. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement toward a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. On today's show, we have two interviews to honor the pigs, and pigs just happen to hold a dear spot in my heart for me. Our first interview is with animal activist Karen Bowman of the group Toronto Pig Save. Toronto Pig Save has been organizing weekly vigils in downtown Toronto to bear witness to the pigs who are on their way to the slaughterhouse, much like the weekly vigils that Jackie has been involved with for the chickens going to slaughter here in Vancouver. A video that Toronto Pig Save put online a few weeks ago of their efforts to try to help the pigs as they suffer in the trucks during a heat wave in Toronto has now gone viral, and you both have seen this video, right?
Yes, it's horrific.
Yeah, horrific.
But amazing at the same time.
Amazing. Incredibly touch it. When I saw it, I knew that I wanted to know more about the experiences that these courageous volunteers have endured in being present in this trying situation. Karen is the main human person featured in the video, and she is here today to tell us about that and more about Toronto Pig Save. Then for our feature interview, we have Sarah Thurston on the show, who is a campaigner for the Humane Society International. In Canada, the National Farm Animal Care Council has released a draft code of practice for the handling and care of pigs in the animal agriculture industry, and they are calling upon people for public feedback on the new proposed policies until tomorrow, August 3rd. There is still time to act. The Humane Society International and Farm Sanctuary has been actively campaigning to have citizens' voices heard on the subject of gestation crates, to tell the NFACC to get rid of gestation crates for mother pigs in the new code of practice. Sierra is going to be here today to speak with us about the issue of gestation crates and to inform us about what we can do to have this system phased out. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned. And Jenny, you've got some exciting stuff for us.
Yeah. In the meantime, I think the best way to help animals is by not eating them. And one of the best ways to do that is to become vegan. So we've got a book to help you here. Last week on the show, we interviewed Victoria Moran, the author of Main Street Vegan, Everything You Need to Know to Eat Healthfully and Live Compassionately in the Real World. So I'm sitting here with the book in front of me, and I'm going to do a draw from the people who liked our podcast from last week on Facebook to win a copy of the book.
So we're going to
do a drum roll, please.
It's pretty loud, Cynthia.
And Renata Saunders, you have won, so we will contact you with information about how you can claim your
congratulations.
Prize.
Congratulations.
Exciting. More exciting things. This weekend we were at VegFest Vancouver, and so today we're going to be giving away a herbivore t-shirt, an artisan vegan cheese book, the book Cooking for Carnivores, and a $10 gift certificate to Eternal Abundance here in Vancouver on the drive.
We had a ton of people enter this draw, and thank you to everyone who entered last weekend at VegFest.
Yeah, it's a big crowded tin I'm looking at here, full of entries. So the winners will get their choice of prize. So we're going to draw four names right now. Exciting. Drum roll. So first off, our winner is Brian. Brian, we will contact you, Brian.
No last name, Brian.
We have his
Brian.
Email.
Just to Brian.
Also, Lisa Grixty.
Congratulations, Lisa.
Number two. Michelle Ference has also won.
Congratulations, Michelle.
And Michelle Welgen has also won.
Congratulations, Michelle number two.
It's a lucky day to be a Michelle.
That's great. We will be contacting you via email on which prize you want and then how you can claim your prize. So, VegFest. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, VegFest was last Saturday, July 27th in downtown Vancouver, and it spanned three full blocks of Granville Street, and it ran from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It had vegan food vendors, tables, animal protection groups, and local businesses, vegan businesses, and groups like us. We were there and had a booth, and that's how we have all these amazing people who entered the raffle. We had raffles, and we had Alyssa, who's doing some face painting, and we had a lot of people come by and chat to us. I had a really great time, and I know you two were there as well. Things I really liked about VegFest was that it spanned three blocks, so there was a lot of people who knew about VegFest.
Granville Street.
On Granville Street, which is
huge.
So busy.
Our busiest street in downtown Vancouver for people who aren't aware.
Oh, exactly. And we were right outside the SkyTrain station, so you could tell people just getting on the SkyTrain being like, what's this? Let's go see.
Whoa, VegFest.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And I kind of made a joke that, look, they're leafleting themselves because there are people walking
people
by.
People are just grabbing stuff. Usually if you're standing on the street, on Granville Street, trying to hand stuff out to people on any given day, it's not as easy to do as people coming up to you and grabbing stuff,
being
which
like,
is great.
Can I take these stickers? And I'm like, awesome, they're all vegan stickers.
Yeah, but a lot just, of like brochures and that
too. Brochures, the stickers, they're just loving it, asking questions. It was great. So I love that it spanned this big block, three big blocks on a very busy street. And it also had fun things, like there was like carnival type prizes. So you just make a donation and you could like throw bean bags at like veggie burgers. And
you could win plush vegetables. I wanted to take a broccoli home. I was trying really hard.
They were educational games, though. Like, do try to get the bullseye in these different sources of calcium that are all plant-based.
Yeah.
That's the one that I
definitely
can remember.
And all the prizes were, like, vegan-based. And I got a necklace that says, I love veggies, which I
beautiful
love.
Necklace.
Yes. Too bad you can't see it, but it's amazing. And, yeah, so I thought it was a really great time. A lot of people I knew, I joked around that I saw almost every vegan in Vancouver that I knew. Everybody came to support the event, which was great.
For sure.
And you guys were both there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any comments about your time at VegFest and our beautiful talk that we did together?
Cynthia and I did a wonderful talk. They had a speaker stage. You know, I was just thinking about this last night, and if they could make one improvement, I would say put the speaker's stage in the middle.
Very
because
good,
it was way at the other end, which might have been considered to be the beginning, but it was actually like just for any person going, that was just the end, right? Mm-hmm. So you'd have to walk way to the end. Anyways, we had a platform of 15 minutes just to speak our hearts out on whatever we wanted. So just like we do here on the radio every week, which we kind of joked about at the beginning, we're talking to, because we didn't really have an audience, but then people started coming, so we got to speak about some animal issues and just what we do here on the show. So that was a nice platform, and I think that was a really great idea. How was your talk, Jenny did a talk too.
It was awesome.
I wasn't able to see it because we were at the table and we were way down there.
I had quite a large time span to speak for, which was
awesome, right?
Yeah, so I got to kind of do a lot of self-promotion. Actually, it was funny because I was mostly telling my story and all of the awesome things that have happened to me since I decided to like start focusing on helping animals. And my boyfriend commented to me after. He said, I think you sounded kind of braggy. And I think he was a little bit right, so maybe I'll try and tone it down next time. But you know, there's a lot to brag about when you know, there's so many health benefits and I've met so many interesting people. It's been a really great journey to help animals, and Animal Voices has been a great part of that, so it was great to plug the show too. And
that's awesome. I love that too. We kind of discussed too how veganism is this amazing thing in our lives, and you talked about how you don't have to suffer. I mean, even we talked a little bit about cheese, but you talked about how there's delicious vegan cheeses. I mean,
that's usually like their stumbling block. And we had some conversations. I had some conversations at our table that day, actually, about cheese, because people wanted to win the Artisan Vegan Cheese book. And I was telling them all about it and how wonderful it is. And no, you don't have to suffer. You can still have your cheese. So I just had like a lot of really good conversations at the table. So that's what I took away from it. And I hope people like took away from that as well. Like they were able to engage with us and maybe learn and discuss and sort of broaden their minds, you know, and just think about things and talk about things that normally they wouldn't have a chance to, actually, for those whole three blocks. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think it was really great also to bring the vegan community together. Like, I saw a lot of people I hadn't seen in a while, so it was really great to connect with people again. And then in addition to that, it was really interesting too, just to see all the people in Vancouver. It was pretty vibrant. Next year, I'd really love to see some vegan buskers, some VegFest tunes.
That's a great idea.
I think some tunes would be great. And I really liked Also, I got to see some organizations who I didn't know about who are online, some vegan-based yarn and clothing companies.
Yeah, businesses.
And businesses that, you know, yeah. So I got some cards and it was just a great event. And so next year, I hope it'll be bigger and better and that more vegan organizations get a table and join and be have fun at VegFest next year.
Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, is member-owned. When you take out a membership in Co-op Radio, you get a share in the station. This makes you a part owner.
Co-op Radio is member-driven. When you become a member, you can get involved in programming and help run the station. Co-op Radio is community radio. Visit cooperadio.org to find out how you can become a member.
Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, all different, all the time.
Welcome back to Animal Voices here on CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio. So right now, we're going to share some events with you. This week, we've got a lot of exciting things going on, especially in the film department. August 2nd to 8th, The Ghosts in Our Machine is screening as part of the Vancouver International Film Festival at the Van City Theatre. The film by Liz Marshall documents photographer Joanne MacArthur's work photographing a human's relationship with animals and her quest to expose animal exploitation. Also at the festival, the documentary Blackfish about killer whales in captivity plays from August 2nd to 18th at the Van City Theatre downtown. So that's really great. I think on Saturday, both of them are showing back-to-back, so that might be a good chance to catch both of them. And we've had the people from both of those productions on our show before, so if you check on our website, animalvoices.org, you can see those interviews and learn about them. Are you guys going to be going?
Yep, I'm going, and I know Allison's going as well. I'm definitely going to Ghost in Our Machine. I just have to convince my boyfriend to go to two movies back-to-back.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my mom to come out. I think as someone who's watched Ghost in Our Machine, it's a really great film, and I think it will really help to change a lot of people's perspectives about things, so I think it's pretty powerful. I'm calling it the New Earthlings.
Nice.
Also happening on Sunday, August 4th, the Vancouver Pride Parade takes place. Mercy for Animals Canada will be marching and distributing leaflets and promoting, well, mercy for animals. The parade begins at Robson Street and Thurlow Street and heads down to Denman Street. It follows Denman to Pacific Street and to Beach Avenue and then finishes at Sunset Beach Festival site downtown. They only have room for a few volunteers, so if you want to march with Mercy for Animals, email them at lucass, L-U-C-A-S-S, at mercyforanimals.ca, or just come to the Pride parade and support what's going on. Hand out some leaflets, you know.
I'm really looking forward to that.
I think we're all going to be in it.
Oh, you're going to do it too?
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. Awesome.
Bring your crazy...
Let's chat about that after the show, see what we're going to wear.
Color coordinator outfits. You'll find us. We'll be the matching people marching.
I've never been to the Pride Parade before, and I'm thrilled to be able to do it for the animals this year. So that is my reason for going. That's my excuse, my justification of taking a Sunday afternoon off.
I think it's amazing, intersectionality between oppressions, all oppressions.
Yes, so, and I think we're going to be holding a banner that Jenny designed that talks about, speaks to that, right?
It has
against
a
oppression
Luther
of
King.
All beings. And
yeah, it has a Martin Luther King quote about no one is free when others are oppressed. So it's a pretty powerful statement. And they've also got some special leaflets designed specifically for Pride that feature some prominent people from that community. So they've got Ricky Martin and Ellen DeGeneres and a famous drag queen also on that leaflet. So it's pretty cool. Also happening before the Pride Parade, you got to make sure you do this. If you visit nfacc.ca/codes-of-practice/pigs, you can complete a survey. Do it before August 3rd because that's the deadline. Tomorrow, you can do it. Mercy for Animals Canada is encouraging people to fill out the survey and let them know that gestation crates are cruel and castration should be banned in Canada. Lots of other groups are also supporting this survey. We're actually going to be doing an interview about that later. Yeah, so we'll talk more about that later in the show, but make sure you go fill out the survey.
But it is, I just want to give a caveat, like it's a pretty lengthy survey and it's due tomorrow. And if you
don't
think
they do that on purpose, they're trying to like weed people out, like, oh, they won't fill out a survey, they don't care.
I don't know,
animals.
But I just want to say if it's too long for you to fill out, you can simply sign a petition as well, sending the same message to the NFACC. And that's on our website. There's a link to that, but we'll be talking about that more on the show later.
And also, of course, there's two weekly events that are going on always in Vancouver. We have chicken vigils every Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. at the intersection of Commercial Drive and Hastings Street outside of the storage facility and slaughterhouse to witness the suffering of the chickens and try and spread awareness about the plight of animals. And also shark fin demos happen every single Friday night from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. The Vancouver Animal Defense League hosts them at 3888 Main Street. That's Sun Sui Wa restaurant in Vancouver, where they're speaking out for sharks against the horrific shark fin industry. 100 million sharks are killed every year for their fins simply to be served in a soup that is served at that restaurant. So they're trying to get that to not happen anymore.
Thanks so much for the events, Jenny. For our first interview today, we have Toronto activist Karen Bowman on the show. Karen is a dedicated volunteer for the group called Toronto Pig Safe, whose aim is to erect glass walls at Toronto slaughterhouses in order to encourage people to try vegan, protect the environment, and support local farm sanctuaries. The group holds weekly vigils to bear witness of pigs being transported to a slaughterhouse in downtown Toronto, and recently a very moving video that was taken of the group's actions and trying to help some of the pigs on the transport truck has gone viral on the internet. Karen is the main person featured in that video, and she is here today to tell us about Toronto Pig Save and her experiences in attending these vigils for the animals.
I know, I'm really excited. I found the video really moving because you can really see like the faces of the pigs. If you're not aware, they're usually transported in these big, huge, I think they're steel or like metal trucks. So in the video, it got very hot during this heat wave. So some of the pigs, they were burning. You can hear them hyperventilating.
They're squealing and, really loudly.
Yeah, it's quite sad to watch. But someone was able to get up there with a camera because they have these really thin angular round slots. Not angular, they are round slots on the crates. So you can see inside and you can really see the pigs' faces and notice them. And there's some like interactions that happen with specific animals. So it was really cool to see those details going on in the video.
And yeah, they were just so thirsty when they were feeding them the water. You could just tell it was just like somebody was just, they were just gasping for the water. They were so thirsty. And it's just horrific that they transport them in these trucks without water, without anything. And the whole animal agriculture industry is horrible. But one of the worst processes is the transferring of animals in these trucks in the middle of summer without any kind of air conditioning or any kind of water.
So we do have Karen on the air here. Hello, Karen, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on the show today to speak with us about the courageous actions that you have been taking in these weekly vigils for the pigs. First, could you tell us about how Toronto Pig Save came to be? I understand the group started in 2010, actually. What was the impetus to start the group?
Well, it was actually founded by a woman named Anita Krines, and she started the movement because she would walk her dog down Lakeshore in Toronto, and she would see the trucks, the transport trucks carrying pigs, and she just said it was, you know, it was a really heartbreaking scene that nobody was doing anything about it. So she started it, and she started by herself, actually, and it's become a pretty big movement now in Toronto and kind of all over, so it's pretty big what she's doing.
So the main activity of Toronto Pig Save is to bear witness to the pigs as they pass through the city of Toronto on their way to the slaughterhouse, where they will then be killed for consumption. Karen, you've been attending these vigils, which are now happening three times a week, from what I understand. A few weeks ago, on July 17th and 18th, you were present when the video was made that has gone viral now online, showing yourself and the other volunteers giving the pigs water and watermelon in order to appease their discomfort a little bit. There was a heat wave in Toronto on those days. Please describe to us in your own words what your experiences were like when the video was made. What did you see? What did you do? How did you feel?
It was heartbreaking. The experience is never easy, but on those particular days when it was so hot out, you just felt awful. I mean, you know, we were outside and we were, you know, the volunteers were really, really hot. So I can't even imagine what it would be like inside a metal truck with, you know, dozens of other bodies with no water or food or, you know, not even great ventilation. So it was very, very difficult to see and to bear witness to it. But we did what we could. And because of that, you know, people are curious and wondering why we were doing what we're doing. And so it kind of brought a lot of awareness, which is, you know, a great thing.
Can you describe what you're seeing in the trucks? As it seems like in the video, it's the trucks are stopping at maybe an intersection, and at this time,
yes,
you get an opportunity to engage with them and to actually observe them. What I can understand is you can hear like extreme vocalizations, and mm-hmm. the pigs are having trouble breathing. What else are you mm-hmm. seeing in those trucks?
So you see many pigs kind of just jammed into the truck. All of them have scratches and cuts. They're bleeding. Many of them are foaming at the mouth. Some of them are lying down and being trampled on. They're lying in their own and standing in their own feces. It's not a pleasant sight. It's really, really inhumane. It's awful.
And from what I read somewhere, that those days that the videos were shot, it was it felt like it was about 45 degrees Celsius outside. I can only imagine just how awful it was inside those metal trucks. You were able to give water and watermelon to those pigs, as we can see in the video. What was that like? It just looks like they're just like completely hungry and for it and wanting that help.
They are. Many of them came to the vents, the holes in the trucks, mm-hmm. to get water and watermelon. Some of them were really scared, rightfully so. But a lot of them, once you know we kind of offered it to them, they were taking it. It was like they hadn't had a drink all day. And some places, I think, actually ask that the animals don't have anything to eat or drink before they're shipped to the mm-hmm. slaughterhouse, so that it just makes for a cleaner slaughter, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, can't say for sure.
Do you think that the pigs know where they are going? What is your thoughts about that?
I think they certainly know that something bad is about to happen. I mean, pigs have a fantastic sense of smell, more so than dogs. And where they are unloaded at the slaughterhouse is very close to where they're actually slaughtered. So they can smell blood, they can smell feces, they can smell, they can smell it. So they certainly know something bad.
You're cutting out. I don't know if you're on a cell phone or not, but I don't know if you can get back into range. Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Okay.
I think that they can sense that something's happening, but they perhaps don't know what exactly, but I certainly do think they know that something terrible is happening, yeah.
You know, in the video, you said it's so heartbreaking to think that the help that you're giving them, it's the only mercy and love that they have had in their entire lives. Perhaps you can expand upon that thought.
Well, I mean, these beings are essentially born in captivity. Factory farms are an awful place to be. And many of them are born in captivity, and they don't know what outside is like. They don't know what it feels like to bathe in the sun. They don't know what it feels like to do anything natural. And that's awful. It's very heartbreaking.
How are you able to persevere and keep going to the vigils and support this? It sounds like it's a very hard thing to be part of, to witness the suffering.
It is. It certainly is. But we're all together, and we're all there for one another. you know, it's not uncommon for any of us to break down and cry while we're experiencing this. But after the trucks are gone, of course, we don't want to show them the things that, you know, we're sad. But we are there for one another, and we know what we're doing is the right thing. And so that's why we do it, because we know that what we're doing is right. We're raising awareness and showing love and compassion to another life. So
how do other people respond to this? Like, do people, passerbys, ever stop and witness the suffering as well? Or what's your experience like with people on the street?
There's a great number of supporters. Many people who drive by, if they're stopped at the lights, we'll offer them a pamphlet. Some people just say no thank you, but a lot will take a pamphlet and read it and go to Toronto Pig Save website and see what we're doing. Curiosity is one thing that we have on our side. People are really interested in why we're out there and what we're doing. So we have a really great number of supporters, especially once this video has gone out. It's, you know, we've received like a overwhelming amount of emails thanking us for what we do, thanking us for educating people, thanking us for telling people how it actually is, because it's just a case that people don't know what goes on. People don't want to know, maybe.
Yeah, so I think this is what the purpose is of bearing witness, and that's what your purpose is out there, is you're bearing witness as these sentient beings are being sent to their deaths. Do you think this is the key first step to ending the killings of these beings, to bear witness and to be out there in public?
Absolutely, absolutely. If this is going to continue happening, people need to know the truth. And I think once people know what is actually going on and how inhumane it is and how exploited these beings are, I think people are going to start making the connection between what's on their plates and a life. Right now you can go to the grocery store and you can pick up, you know, you can pick up pork or bacon, but there's no connection between that anymore. So I think once people start to really realize that, hey, this is an actual animal that wanted to live, I think they're going to stop.
I just wanted to point out as well that Joanne MacArthur, the photographer that is featured in the film The Ghosts in Our Machines, that is being screened here in Vancouver this week and next week, she was at your vigil yesterday and she took photographs. Did you see the photographs, Karen? You probably did.
I did, yeah.
They're quite amazing. They're posted online on Facebook, and I just want to put that out there for our listeners if you're interested in seeing just some really amazing photographs that Joanne MacArthur has taken yesterday morning, that they are right there, and we actually posted them on our Facebook page as well. Toronto Pig Save offers support for anyone else who wants to start their own pig save groups in their own communities, or even a cow save or chicken save groups for that matter. What is some advice then that you can offer people who want to start their own groups?
Just do it. Just go out there, make a sign, and start spreading awareness. You may be the only person for, you know, a week or two, but others will catch on. And just do it. Sometimes at the vigils there aren't very many people, but sometimes there are a lot. There's a lot of people, and so, you know, that's great. People come when they can, and so that's just essentially how you should start. You can see online, you can find online where slaughterhouses are in your community, and you can just go down to one and start flying a sign and spreading awareness.
Thank you, Karen, for coming on the show today to speak about your experiences in bearing witness to these sentient creatures on their way to slaughter. To see the video we've been talking about, you can find it actually on our Facebook page and on our website, animalvoices.org. I also encourage you to visit Toronto Pig Save's website at torontopigsave.org, where you can find lots of information and resources as well for starting your own group. You can also join the Toronto Pig Save group on Facebook to get more involved. Thank you for all you're doing, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio Station in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Now on to some news. In the States, the landmark egg gag lawsuit fights fights threats to freedom of speech. In Salt Lake City, the Animal Defense League and PETA have filed a historic lawsuit that challenges the egg gag laws. So if you remember, these egg gag laws stop undercover investigators from going into animal agriculture places like slaughterhouses and factory farms and stop them from recording videos. Now PETA and Animal Defense League Fund are filing a lawsuit and saying that this is unconstitutional to have these laws. And so hopefully that'll pass. In just a couple months ago in Tennessee, Governor Bill Haslam vetoed the egg gag law there as well. So that'll be good if that goes through, because that's crazy to stop those undercover investigations.
Yeah, that's awesome. And just to point out, the egg gag laws, yeah, they try and make it legal for people to film on the farm owner's property without permission and other things like that, or that you need to submit your footage within a certain very finite amount of time, like 24 hours or 48 hours. So it's kind of unrealistic.
Yeah, and they also have taken people to court who have applied for jobs in animal agriculture who were undercover investigators. And so it's just insane. So hopefully that'll pass so that other states will stop having these egg gag laws. And then also in the States, anonymous liberators free 2,400 minks from a fur farm in Idaho. So on July 28th, the anonymous liberators went into Burley, Idaho, and freed about 2,400 minks in the U.S. board member Cindy Moyle's fur farm. So she is a board member for the Fur Commission, and she also has a fur farm. So I just found that quite interesting in the States.
How did they free them? That's amazing.
Yeah, so they basically, they had security around the compound, but they somehow were able to infiltrate the compound and went in and freed them. And they,
it's like a secret mission.
It was. It was when reading, they have this amazing piece that they put out about it, and I just wanted to read a bit from it, but I really encourage people to go out and read it. So basically they said that they will claim that we are terrorists. We say that it's peacefully opening cages is an act of terrorism, then the word has no meaning. It is appropriately applied to the mass imprisonment and killing of wild animals. They'll claim that these minks are domesticated animals and will starve. Documentation on the success of farm-bred minks in the wild is extensive. So we'll add only our experience watching these natural aquatic animals who have spent their entire lives in cages, head extinctly for water, and begin to swim and hunt. They will claim that the conditions of the mink farm were humane. We ask then, why? They try to hide those farms from the public, pushing for legislation to criminalize the taking of photographs. The mink that we freed from Moyles lived in intensive confinement in their own waste. Their suffering was plain to the eye, and their yearning from freedom was plain to the soul. I just love that article, so I really recommend people to read that. And then also in the States, a lot of news coming out of the U.S., SeaWorld is under fire again after a recording of a pilot whale struggling to get into the water surfaced on the internet. So SeaWorld has these pilot whales, and basically they're in these tanks, and sometimes they climb up on the side of the tank, kind of like you would get beached on a beach.
Or me at the swimming pool.
Or you at the swimming pool. And so this disturbing incident was caught on tape by somebody who was attending SeaWorld, and they went to the trainers and said that you have to get this free this whale, but they were like, oh no, it's fine. They'll free themselves. And then after about 30 minutes, he didn't. So then somebody came in and pushed the whale back, the dolphin back in the water, and SeaWorld basically said that this is normal for these animals and that they have to let them try to get in, otherwise they won't learn. And so it was just interesting because reading this article,
why do they need to learn? They're in captivity. They have everything else done for them. Why do they have to learn how to fend for themselves if they get get stuck.
It's ridiculous. And then they also said that's why they couldn't release them back into the wild, because these animals don't know how to survive in the wild.
But that's not their intention anyways. They're moneymakers. They're not there to be released back in the wild.
Oh, exactly. They
contradictory
also
contradictory statements.
Exactly. And when they released the statement, they had said that they had saved this whale from, you know,
and that isn't that always the case? Is I was watching a television show, animal rescue television show at the gym a few weeks ago, and they were talking about how they saved this sea creature. I can't remember. It was a sea lion or something. So we've rescued him, but we've determined he won't be able to go back into the wild by himself. So he's going to live at this aquarium for the rest of his life.
And that's exactly what they were saying. And I think this article was actually published, like I said, in a very mainstream news media publication, and they also had mentioned actually blackfish in the publication, and they also mentioned the Empty the Tanks protest, which happened last Saturday in Vancouver.
Not everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah, exactly. And so all over. And so they mentioned that it was at that SeaWorld and other ones. So it's becoming mainstream. And hopefully this will be the end to these beautiful animals in captivity.
Thank you for the news, Cynthia. For our feature interview today, we have Sayara Thurston with us, who is a campaigner for the Humane Society International. On June 1st, the Canadian National Farm Animal Care Council released a draft for the new code of practice for the care and handling of pigs, which calls for a partial ban of the use of gestation crates in Canada for pigs. The draft code is currently up for review for the public, and HSI and Farm Sanctuary, along with actor Ryan Gosling, are calling upon on the NFACC to completely eradicate the use of gestation crates. Sayara is here today to speak with us about gestation crates and the impending code of practice. Hello, Sayara, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on the show today to speak with us about this current issue. It's very current. This involves Canadian practices for farmed animals, and I think it's important for our listeners, and especially for our Canadian listeners, to be aware of new impending laws that will be coming into effect for the animals that they consume. But to bring us back to the basics, first, can you please walk us through the process of birthing for farmed pigs, and what is that all about? How do gestation crates fit into this process?
Sure. So at the moment in Canada, the vast majority of breeding pigs, so there's about 1.4 million breeding pigs currently housed on Canadian farms, and the majority of those pigs are kept in what we call gestation crates. So these are cages, essentially, which are about 2 feet wide and 7 feet long. So basically they're the same size as the animal's body. So each individual sow, while she's pregnant, is housed in one of these cages. So she can maybe take a step forward, a step back. She can sort of lie down, but, you know, her legs will poke out from the sides of this cage. And she's kept in here day and night for the 4 months of her pregnancy. And then, you know, she's briefly taken out, put into another cage, which is called a farrowing crate, to give birth and nurse her piglets for a few weeks, and then re-impregnated and put back into a gestation crate. So this is, you know, just a cycle of pregnancy after pregnancy. And the majority of her time is spent in these tiny, tiny cages, which obviously offer no quality of life. You know, pigs are incredibly intelligent animals. It would be like keeping a dog, you know, in one of these cages, which no one would find acceptable. And this is currently standard practice on Canadian farms.
I understand that when animals such as pigs are confined in small spaces, they will engage in neurotic behaviors. Can you just touch upon these a little bit, please?
Exactly. So, you know, these are, as I said, you know, they're very intelligent animals. Pigs are actually smarter than dogs and some primates. And they're, you know, they're curious, they're playful. When people, you know, interact with pigs, they're always astounded by how much they love to play and how they'll, you know, sort of interact with you in a very friendly way. And so keeping an animal in a situation where she has no form of stimulation, she can't socialize with other animals, she can't even move, so there will be both physical and psychological impacts on her welfare. So physically, you know, she suffers from, you know, loss of muscle mass, loss of bone density. You know, she's standing on a concrete floor, which, you know, for a hoofed animal you know, causes leg and foot pain and ulcers, open wounds from rubbing up against the sides of her cage, and psychologically, exactly. So animals who are kept in intensive confinement often exhibit what we call, you know, stereotypic behaviors. So you'll see sows who are kept in gestation crates swinging their heads back and forward repetitively, or bar biting, you know, chewing on the bars of their cage because they literally have nothing else to do, sometimes until their gums bleed. And these are all symptoms of being kept in this intensively confined housing system where she can't even turn around. She doesn't even have enough space to turn around for 4 months at a time.
The National Farm Animal Care Council has recently released a new draft code of practice for the care and handling of pigs. Can you please tell us what this new code of practice currently says with regards to gestation crates?
Sure. So the new code of practice was released at the beginning of June. It's a draft code at this point. And at the moment, the draft, what it has is a mandatory phase-out of continually housing sows in gestation crates. So what that will mean is, so the timeline that they've put on that is 2024. So by July 2024, Canadian producers will have to have a system where they keep pregnant sows in group housing systems. So group housing is an indoor system where the sows are kept inside in open pens in small groups of sort of, you know, 6 to 12 animals, and they can move around, can socialize with other animals, they can exhibit at a very, you know, sort of minimum some of their basic natural behaviors. It's not, you know, it's not sort of frolicking out in the field, it's not a paradise for these animals by any means, but it's a huge step forward. And so that's what the code will be requiring. There is, however, an allowance in the code for keeping animals in gestation crates for up to, it says, 28 days, so the first 4 weeks of their pregnancy, with an allowance for another 7 days at the discretion of the producer, which is obviously a very sort of loosely worded loophole in there. So up to 35 days we're basically talking about, which is 5 weeks, so 5 weeks in a gestation crate per pregnancy, so out of every sort of 4 months plus the few weeks that she spends nursing her piglets. So this is a huge step forward in terms of, you know, not keeping animals in gestation crates 24/7 for 4 months, but it's still, we definitely still feel like it's too long, especially when it's not supported by the best available science. Producers are looking to keep sows in gestation crates for the beginning of their pregnancies because there are concerns that when you mix sows straight away after breeding, there can be issues with aggression and with sows actually miscarrying or giving birth to fewer live piglets. However, that's not supported by the science. When you look at even the study that the National Farm Animal Care Council did themselves, because for each code process they do a study a review of the science that's out there, they concluded that there was no difference in productivity if you mix sows after 7 days or after 35 days. So there's really no excuse for keeping sows in gestation crates for that period of time. So what we're looking for, you know, because there's a public consultation period going on right now with the code of practice, is for that allowance to be removed and for sows to spend much less or no time in gestation crates.
Well, thank you. That was just a lot of great information you just gave us. What are the majority of Canadians saying with regards to how they want farmed pigs to be treated in the process of them being raised for slaughter for food? I understand there's been a recent national poll that was done to survey this.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that national poll, you know, we found that an overwhelming majority of Canadians, so 84% of Canadians, were in favor of the Canadian pork industry moving away from gestation crates completely, so completely getting rid of this practice. And, I mean, that's not surprising. You see this trend that's happening with consumers, you know, with obviously pork products, but with also a lot of animal welfare issues. You know, consumers are becoming much more informed of these issues, and they don't find, as, you know, very unsurprisingly, once they're informed about them, they don't find it acceptable to intensively confine animals in this way.
Yeah, so that brings me to speaking about pressure to retailers and from retailers. I know that with public pressure, as more and more people are finding out what these systems of gestation crates and confinement is all about, there's some major businesses that sell pork for consumption that have started to demand that their suppliers not use gestation crates. And not only that, but even here locally in Vancouver, for example, 20 of our restaurants have signed a petition calling for the end of gestation crates. Can you speak about this progress that is being made in the retail and restaurant industries?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, this is really coming back to consumers. I mean, retailers are making fantastic progress on this issue, and they're doing it because they're listening to their customers, and they're saying, okay, our customers don't find this acceptable. How can we make this better? You know, we've seen such great progress on things like sustainable seafood in recent years, and this is really carrying over into farm animal issues now. So in the last 2 years alone, you know, more than 60 of North America's biggest restaurants or companies, including McDonald's, Burger King, Tim Hortons, have committed to getting gestation crates out of their supply chains in the next, you know, they have different timelines, but by 2017, by 2022, so in the next few years. And in Canada this year, the Retail Council of Canada actually announced on behalf of 8 of the largest supermarket chains here, including Loblaws, Sobeys, Metro, Walmart, Costco, you know, very big names, very big purchases of pork, that they wanted to see the Canadian industry move away from gestation crate confinement. So, I mean, this is a trend that's it's speeding up. It's just, you know, this is not acceptable to consumers anymore, and retailers are responding to that by saying that they want their suppliers to move away from this practice.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize the power of the consumer in changing that the way that animals are treated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you know, we often say that, you know, you vote with your fork every time that you sit down to eat, and this is absolutely, you know, it's completely true, especially in cases like this where, you know, the industry is completely beholden to the consumer, because, you know, if they don't have a market, then they can't sell their product. And so this is something that the consumer has a huge amount of power over.
So say these crates were to be phased out as we're wanting to happen, and they're eliminated. Do you think that practice will actually be enforced? Like, is there a way to actually ensure that this does happen and isn't just like a law or a standard that isn't used?
That's a good question. I mean, the National Farm Animal Care Council process at the moment is, so the way it works is it's a multi-stakeholder process. So there's a lot of, obviously, producer representation on the committee who develops the new code, and then there's animal welfare representation, government representation. But the end product is a code of practice, which isn't actually, it's not a piece of legislation, so it's not a law, and it can't be enforced by provincial or federal bodies. It's actually industry enforced at the moment. And it's only recently, actually, the codes used to be completely voluntary, so, you know, they had no teeth whatsoever, and it's only recently that the codes have started, we've started seeing these mandatory elements. So it's an industry-enforced, you know, standard, but the Canadian Pork Council are going to require it to give a production license to producers. And, you know, we obviously see a lot of room for improvement in the years to come with how stringently these codes are enforced, because, you know, industry enforced is, it's better than having something which is completely voluntary, but we'd like to see it go a step further. You know, some provinces have already adopted the codes into their provincial animal care regulations, and we'd really like to see that sort of process continue.
I always wonder why it takes so long once these legislations or voluntary codes of practice are put into place to phase out these systems. For example, you said that for this current code of practice that's going to go into effect, it's 2024 we're looking at.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of research on this, but maybe you can tell us in your own words why does it take so long?
Yeah, well, I mean, the issue with gestation crates is that it's, you know, we're really talking about a change to infrastructure. So, ripping out sort of existing facilities out of barns and either creating a new barn or renovating a barn to adapt it to this group housing system. So that's the reason for the time allowance. It's to let producers who have perhaps, you know, installed newer equipment in the last 5 or 10 years, let that equipment depreciate, and then, you know, sort of, because, I mean, when you're talking about either, you know, battery cages, gestation crate, any sort of farming equipment, it doesn't last forever. So as a producer, they would have to replace their equipment eventually anyway, and so we're talking about letting them replace it but move to a new system. You know, the Canadian pork industry talks a lot about the economic difficulties that they've had in the last several years, which, you know, those were sort of happening before this code of practice process even was begun. But now they're further saying, oh, you know, this is going to cost us a lot of money. And so that's the reason for the phase in. We're actually calling for the code to come into effect a little bit sooner. You know, the Retail Council, when they made their announcement in April, asked for the transition to be made, at least for their suppliers, by 2022. Mm-hmm. And so that's the date that we're asking the industry to match.
You've said that you wish for Canada to become a leader in the pig industry when it comes to phasing out the use of gestation crates in our country. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what other countries and states have already done this, such as the European Union, and there's some states in the U.S. as well?
Yeah. So, you know, I've talked a lot about how this is a trend with regards to retailers and companies, but that's absolutely true as well with states or countries or the European Union, as you say. So in the European Union, you know, we saw on January 1st this year a piece of legislation, so actually, you know, a binding law that came into effect which prohibits the use of the continuous use of gestation crates. As you say, 9 states in the U.S. have already banned the practice of keeping sales in gestation crates. In Australia, you know, they actually sort of developed a code of practice similar to what we're seeing right now, which had an allowance for keeping sows. It was actually up to 6 weeks that they were allowed to keep them in gestation crates. But there was such a backlash from retailers, from the public, from animal protection organizations, that they then sort of had to go back on that and agree to a complete phase out of gestation crates by 2017. And New Zealand has also phased them out. You know, this is something that we're seeing around the world, and as I've said, you know, it's not slowing down. If anything, it's speeding up. You know, the EU law that came into effect this year does allow for some time in gestation crates, but we're already seeing countries going further than that. You know, this is a piece of legislation that was originally passed 10 years ago, but now it's in effect. But since then, several countries in the EU have moved past that and said, okay, no gestation crates at all. And again, retailers are definitely driving that as well. You know, in the UK, McDonald's, who obviously have such a huge supply chain, have just committed to sourcing all of their pork from facilities who use no gestation crates. They don't use any farrowing crates, which are the type of cages that the pigs give birth in, really setting the bar in terms of best practices for animal welfare.
So as we were speaking about before, the National Farm Animal Care Council has opened its doors to the public to give comments on this new draft code of practice, which can be read in its entirety on the web. And the deadline for comments is tomorrow, August 3rd. Can you tell us a little bit about this public commentary process and then what we can expect to happen after tomorrow's deadline? What happens with the draft code then?
Yeah, so what happens is that all of the comments, and we know that, you know, we've definitely directed a lot of people to their websites, so we know there's a lot to review. So they'll be reviewed by the original committee who drafted this code later on this month, and then the committee will review those and sort of make any changes if they're going to be made, and then the timeline that they're aiming for right now is to have a final code of practice in place by the end of this year, and then which would then come into effect as of next year. So that would set, you know, the wheels in motion for these timelines that we're talking about in terms of phasing out of gestation crates and some of the other timelines that are included in the code of practice.
And I understand, too, that HSI has a petition online, which I personally have signed for people that perhaps don't have time to fill out this lengthy survey online, which I actually started. I have it about half filled out right now. And we have links to all of these resources on our website, animalvoices.org, by the way. But perhaps you can tell us about the petition and what that's all about.
Yes, so I mean, definitely the best thing that people can do, as you say, is go and fill out the NFAC form. I know it's long and tedious and awful, but you know, we've got some great talking points on our website that people can just read and sort of get some inspiration on there to fill out the sections. You don't actually have to fill out every section. You can skip all of the sections except the gestation crate one if you just have time to do that one, and you can just click through the other pages. But in terms of the sign-on statement that we have on our website, so we know that a lot of people just want to have their names sort of submitted in this process, and so we're going to submit all of the names of the people who sign on to our petition to the National Farm Animal Care Council in our submission, which we'll either sort of make later today or tomorrow, and so their name will be included as calling on NFAC to go further and to really use this opportunity, because this is what it is. It's an opportunity for the industry to define themselves in terms of setting a high standard for animal welfare, because I mean, the concern that we have purely from an economic point of view for the industry is that they'll set this new standard, which will then essentially be obsolete by the time the ink dries on the paper. You know, we already see Europe going past the standard that came into effect at the beginning of this year. You know, that was a piece of legislation that was written 10 years ago. So we know that the direction that the industry is going is, you know, for higher animal welfare standards, which is what we're really encouraging them to do right now. And so we're letting people express that with by signing under the statement on our website.
I find it very encouraging myself that the industry is actually asking for public opinion. This isn't something that I'm really used to seeing a call for. So I really do encourage everyone who's listening here, especially Canadians, to take advantage of this opportunity and fill out this survey and to fill out this petition, because I feel like this is a sort of a rare opportunity to really get your word in there. And as we've spoken about in this interview, is public pressure really works, because it's the public who is paying for these products, right? And if the public doesn't want the products made and created in this way, then there's not going to be a demand for them. So I just think that's really important to put out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's definitely what we're saying as well, that, you know, that you know, consumers have a voice in this. You know, the retailers who they're buying their products from have listened. They've come up with these great policies. And, you know, this is a Canadian industry, and they are listening right now. So it's definitely this is the time to be heard.
Yeah, and I just felt really empowered myself filling out that survey, because you go through each single thing that is in the new code of practice and you write your comments on it. It's your chance to have a voice. Thank you, Sayara, for coming on the show today to speak about the issue of banning the use of gestation crates for pigs in Canada. To find out more about this campaign, you can visit the Humane Society International's website at hsi.org. You can also find links to the feedback survey and the petition that we mentioned on our website very easily at animalvoices.org. Thank you, Sayara, and have a good day.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to Animal Voices Radio Show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I hope you'll join us next week on the show. That's on August 9th, where we're going to be talking about our thoughts about the movie Blackfish and telling you about our experiences marching in the Pride Parade. What will we wear? In addition to that, we ask here at Animal Voices that you moderately keep connected with us, by visiting us on our website, animalvoices.org, and also by signing up to like our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver Online. We're also on Twitter, Animal Voices YVR. So send us your suggestions and comments on Facebook, Twitter, or you can also email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And again, check our website, animalvoices.org, where you can download this show and all of our previous podcasts as well. If you appreciate the work that we do, please try to make a donation to Co-op Radio. You can donate 5, 10, 20, any amount that you want. You can call us right now at 604-684-8494, and we'll take your pledge over the phone, or go to co-opradio.org to donate as well. We're closing the show with Pig Song by Dr. Will Tuttle. Isn't that right, Allison?
That is correct. So you'll hear some piggy noises in the background. I love all Dr. Will Tuttle's music that he dedicates to the animals. He's coming to Vancouver, by the way, August 24th.
And hopefully, he's going to be here. But in the meantime, stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices, and remember to be kind to the animals.